Dragon Force is one of the scariest
metal bands of all times. Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Hi, Nolan.
And this is episode 208, and it's been a big week or two in gaming. There have been a lot of new games released. Death Stranding came out. Pokemon Sword and Shield, I think just yesterday.
Yep.
Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is out. There was a trailer that dropped for Path of Exile 2.
Yeah, what? I watched it.
Not impressed?
I didn't.
Oh, no, I'm way hyped.
Okay, that sounded the opposite of that.
I'm the hard man to read.
Our topic of discussion for today, however, is Age of Empires 4.
Wow. I also didn't know about that.
Got our first gameplay footage from they first talked about Age of Empires 4 back in 2017. Really haven't heard anything from it since. We have now the gameplay trailer. I shared it with you guys. Did you watch it, and what did you think?
I thought the trailer was dope. And it's actually really hype because that's a major series, and I think that a lot of people are excited. I personally suck at those games and don't really play them, but I'm happy for fans for sure. It was really hype.
Nolan's got PTSD.
I carry it with me.
Kenny, you are kind of a fan of that style of game.
Absolutely. Love real-time strategy. I'm super hyped about Age of Empires 4. I feel like we just keep getting hyped about game titles that have a number 4 in their release. Maybe this whole sequel thing is off and 4 is actually the lucky number.
What's the other 4? Diablo?
Yeah.
Diablo 4?
That's it.
Uh-huh. Is that what it's called? Diablo 4?
Diablo.
Pokemon Sword and Shield 4, I think, is Death Stranding 4? Is that all? Path of Exile 2, 4? Weird. The trailer does look cool. There's not much to it. It's pre-alpha, so it's probably all just like computer-generated, not gameplay for real or anything. But I thought the graphics looked really good. They're going with like complete realism, I felt. Mm-hmm. And it really feels like a living universe world. And the crazy thing is that I thought was that it's set in the same era as Age of Empires 2, or at least it seems. It's set in the Middle Ages. And that's my preferred time frame for these kinds of games. Age of Empires 3 tried to do something different, but Age of Empires 3 also wasn't that great of a game compared to 2,
in
many people's opinion. Right. So returning to the Middle Ages, pretty cool.
Yeah, and what's kind of really exciting about that announcement is it's like a PC game to the core, you know? And I feel like, I don't know, it's been a while since we've had like a truly classic PC release, like maybe the Civ games when they come out. Those are on console now, but like Age of Empires just has such a legacy for PC gaming, and I just like that it's still going.
Well, every few months they release some kind of HD remake for Age of Empires 2, so like they'll do that for forever. Nolan, are you a little bummed that we didn't talk about Pokemon? I know that you are a longtime fanboy of the series and you love Nintendo. Yeah. However, you sent me a message this week that gave me the thoughts that Sword and Shield isn't going to be something that you are too excited about.
I'm not upset that we're not talking about it. So, but it's not for reasons you might expect. There are people really pissed about that game.
Lots of them.
A lot of people, really, like Twitter as a whole, is mad. And it's like, I don't know why they're mad. I haven't looked too deep into it at all. I just know there's drama. I'm not one of those people. I don't want to really talk about it because I really have no interest in playing it. And I can't describe why. I just have lost it. Like, I don't know if I'm a Pokemon fan anymore or I don't care enough.
Wow.
Kenny, you played Pokemon Go more than any of us.
Yeah.
Pokemon hasn't necessarily been your thing, but Pokemon Go was a big thing. Are you going to play Sword and Shield? Do you have any interest?
Nah.
No. I could have told you that. I think Pokemon Go was like a weird spinoff that worked for a lot of people that did not care about Pokemon.
Absolutely. It wasn't Pokemon itself that got me there.
I want to play it one day. I don't want to buy it right now, though. I don't know. It's weird.
There's good games that we're looking forward to. There's rough games of the past and present, whether it's Pokemon Sword and Shield now, or the Age of Empires 3 from the past, or Age of Empires Online. All through all of that, we're going to continue forward to the good games of the future, and through the fire and the flames, we carry on.
Well done.
Like in our retro game of the week, Dragon Force.
Overview.
So Dragon Force is one of the scariest
metal bands of all time.
Scariest game of all time. Horror genre.
No, metal bands is what I said.
Oh, yeah. Also that. Dragon Force is an on-console real-time strategy game, which are frightening to me.
Oh, I see.
Although it leans a little more tactics-ish than a lot of the real-time strategy games that I feel like don't fit well on console. I'm getting ahead of myself. It came out for the Sega Saturn in 1996 and is a Working Designs title.
So all seven Saturn owners played this game probably.
Dang, dude.
It just came out at the wrong time, I think. But
timing was a huge thing here. Like, it's competing with the Nintendo 64 and
PlayStation, pretty much, right? Yeah.
Right, and Mario and 3D games. You know, like, it's...
I don't know much about the console at all. I gotta be honest here.
I bet neither of us three owned one, and I don't know if any of us three knew someone that even had one.
I didn't. I knew someone had a Dreamcast, but that was later.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but, no, I had a Genesis that was in my gaming experience circles, but not a Saturn.
You said Working Design, Kenny. They do a lot of localization of Japanese titles over to the Americas, and they also localized Alundra, the game that you got to play for retro roulette.
Yeah, and this is one of those titles. It was Japanese release originally, came to North America. Thank you, Working Designs, for bringing it. It's a little bit of a hard game to play, but not to play, Freudian slip, to explain, because it's super unique. This is 2D graphics happening in like large scale battles. So think a lot more sprites than you would expect for this time frame to get successfully shoved into a screen and fight each other. And then think, manage your army that is those sprites in lots of menued, minuscule detail level. And you've got Dragon Force.
Now sprinkle in a little anime, too.
Yeah, sprinkle in a little anime. Sprinkle in 8 different storylines with really naturally interwoven story into the gameplay. And a little bit of, I don't know, like, not Fire Emblem, not... Maybe there was a game that was, like, battles that walked around on the world that was, like, ogre fighting or something. I forget what it was called.
It was called Ogre Fighter.
That was similar to this.
Y'all are giving so many components to this recipe that I
guarantee...
Because
it's a weird recipe.
Everyone that's listening has a different picture now in their mind of what in the world this game is.
Totally. And that's because I'm having a hard time, like, trying to package it. It really is a pretty unique title. I don't feel like it plays like anything else, which is why I think initially it was a success and then got a little bit of a cult following afterwards. And I don't know if it's still as popular today, but because Sega Saturn, and it's just not as common, but this is one of those games that if you went back later and tried to actually pick up a hard copy disc of, there was at least a point in time, and maybe this is still true today, where you were having to pay hundreds of dollars
to
get a copy of this game.
Yeah.
Again, they only made 10 because you only had 7 Saturn
users at
the time. That's
not true. There were like 150,000 of these shipped or something.
Yeah, but like, again... Sega Saturn, not many owners compared to Nintendo 64. Right. And so you just have like a you have a supply problem now because the owners of this game don't want to get rid of it because it's a collector's item.
Demand and supply, you know?
Exactly.
So I think what will help at least, like, we're going to have to take this slowly. Just trying to dump on them, here's all of the components, is going to be very confusing. Yeah. I think starting at the beginning and saying what is a little bit of the story here, because there is, I don't know about a lot of story, but like the game is a story. It's a
good amount of story.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, like especially for one of these kinds of tactic.
Absolutely.
RPGs, whatever this genre is, there's a lot of story here, but it's sprinkled throughout. And so at the beginning, you can choose your kingdom. You have six different kingdoms that you're able to choose from. And the kingdom has a certain kind of people and a certain leader of the kingdom. And so that's what you're choosing. And you are finding, and it just kind of starts as like a normal, like you're in a kingdom trying to protect your castles, trying to fight anybody that's coming against you. But very quickly, you discover that you are one of the seven or one of the eight.
One of the eight
different wielders of the Dragon Force. Dope. And this mysterious magic guy shows up to you, shows like something in your hand maybe that illuminates and shows that you are a part of this, again, this Dragon Force, and that the eight wielders of this force need to gather back together because only then will they have the power to stop this evil god that is coming to destroy the universe.
Yeah, Marduk is his name, I think.
I like to say Marduk because of Tekken. That's a cool story. I kind of like lot, actually.
Well, and I think it's funny because it's like we've created a fighting game. How do we make it like this? And they give you this, and the nice thing is, depending on which kingdom you choose, they're like, well, I've got to go find these seven other, you know, people that are wielding the Dragon Force, but they're in other kingdoms. I don't think they're going to be our friends, so we've got to go destroy them all and bring them onto our side. Like, it's either that or you're going through diplomacy trying to get people to your side. Either way, you're conquering the nations around you, you're gathering these Dragon Force wielders together, and then you're eventually stopping Marduk.
Yeah, Marduk, conquer or be conquered.
So which nation did you choose first? We'll do that, and then we can hop into the gameplay section.
Yeah, I did Tristan.
Tristan, which is like the kind of the dark, aren't they kind of bad? Like it's the...
Yeah, a little bit. I chose them because the general, the main character, Junin, it just looked really, really cool. So I just chose her.
And you did say her. Isn't that a part of her story that like she's got this dark mask on and she's known as this person that's going around and slaying everybody, but the surprise is that she is a girl. Female.
When you said she was a girl, I was a little shocked because I didn't play that story.
Came against her, right? In other parts of the game because they are other... Like, I did too. And if you're not playing that empire, then for a long time, most likely, you're not going to know that the leader of that nation is a girl.
It's
which
pretty
is
dope.
It's a part of the story. Pretty cool there. Yeah. Kenny, who is your first?
So I did Pale Moon Kingdom.
That's the little fairies or something. They look kind of fairy-like?
They're elves.
Yeah. They're elves.
They're the elves that live in the forest. And I don't know why. I felt like all the other leaders were either kind of the main story, which can be boring, or were trying way too hard. And it felt like the kind of game where being a magic user could end up being a really cool thing. And so I just sort of picked that one on a whim during my first play this week and then said, well, whatever, I'll just stick to it.
On brand. What'd you go, Dustin?
So first I picked the Izumo Nation, actually, Kenny.
The one that looked even cooler.
Yeah, they looked the coolest. They're all samurais, and very anime. Most of the characters in here, by the way, could be in any kind of like arcade fighter anime thing was back in the day. Yeah. But this is just one of the nations that looked really cool, had a lot of samurais, and was very oriented to that kind of style of fighting and look.
Did you stick with them? You said first. Did you do more than one play?
As we talk about gameplay, you'll discover that I didn't know how to gameplay for the first hour or two. And so my first attempt went rather poorly to where I couldn't do anything. I couldn't win any battle. I just had to stay in my one castle time after time after time. So yes, once I learned the game, I came back, played the Tristan Empire, which that's what you did, Nolan.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed it, started dominating. So let's actually talk about how difficult it is to figure out this game.
Gameplay.
So the box art of this game says strategy RPG, and that's what it's described as online. And I actually agree with that description. So, yeah. But I think that it's more strategy for sure. And I would say it's broken up into two parts. And this is where I totally agree with Kenny's Fire Emblem comparison. So you have a war and strategy mode or side of the game. And then the other side is preparing for that mode and doing some of the more RPG management stuff, but it's not truly RPG. It's definitely more strategy. So it's
it's like domestic kingdom management.
Administration.
Yeah, administration,
domestic,
absolutely.
Domestic administration, and then really just battle, right? Like you're moving across the map and then you're getting into battles.
And the RPG comes into play within themes and style and items and leveling kind of thing. So, but it's more of a strategy game, so that's important that we establish. And we've already thrown out a bunch of comparisons, so let's maybe stop that. So that battle preparation screen is probably what confused you the most, Dustin? Or was it the other, the world
map
side
of things? I'm sure
everything
confused him. Because you jump in and you just have like menu upon menu.
It's
and
menu city.
No context as to what to do. And here's outside context. If you bought
I'll
this
answer
game,
you later, okay. Nolan.
If you bought this game in 1996, you got the disc and it came with a 44-page game manual.
Really?
So that you could figure out what you were doing.
Dang,
Nolan,
that's
if
cool.
you didn't. If you didn't access the manual this week, I don't know how you ended up discovering anything.
I for sure had a guide pulled up.
Okay. No. Well, I didn't use a guide. I used the manual on archive.org. It's got the full HD manual. And so I was able to scroll through, read. It's a really good manual.
It's great.
But it is 40 pages and you need all 40 pages to understand what's going on.
It's like
on
a D&D campaign.
It is. So at the beginning, when you start, you pick your empire, you've got an introductory story, and then you're thrown into your first domestic administration mode. And there's not much you can do because you haven't accomplished anything, you haven't achieved anything, right. But you come back to this every in-game week. There's a timer in the top right corner of the screen that it's a sand timer, and so once it's depleted, it stops whatever's going on and moves you back into this administration mode. So you're coming back to it regularly. At the beginning, you can't do much of anything, but later in the game, you can not only save your game then and only then, but you can plan, you can power up your military, you can reward awards, you can
equip items on your generals,
you can fortify your castles.
You can choose what kind of armies each general has, like all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff though. I think that's important.
A lot of stuff, and it only grows because as you might start off with just six generals, but later in the game you've got 10, 15, 20 generals, and each of these generals represent an army or a squad of military people. It's good. This is one of the games where we can't get too deep in the weeds here because it's going to be confusing to you and not fun to listen to. But the main thing is in this administration mode, you're planning, you're preparing, you're strategizing, and you're strengthening your army. And then in the battle mode, where you spend the majority of your time, you are moving about an overworld map, going from castle to castle, maybe meeting other armies along the way, defending your own castles, and you're then thrust into this kind of rock, paper, scissors battle mode.
And that battle mode is also hard to describe or compare, I think, to anything that I'm familiar with. And real-time strategy, it's not your standard real-time strategy. They adapted it for console, for sure. And so the way that those battles work, you choose your formation type. So, like, you can do Well, first of all, when you enter the battle, you have like a mini prep screen where you choose your general and the soldiers or the armies that you have attached to that general. And you might want to go soldiers for one battle, or you might want to go like mages or harpies, I had in mind, for another. And once you're in that battle, you select from another menu like the formation you want, so you can advance, where you have your front line advance on the enemy and your back line stays and protects your general who needs to stay alive in order to progress in the game.
The thing that shocked me first, and I just thought that I didn't know what I was doing, is that I couldn't move anybody. Like, I couldn't move my main character. In fact, my main character just stands there while his army runs away from him.
Yep.
And that's very confusing. And then trying to maneuver that camera, that's one of the big things here in the battle mode. You're not controlling any individual. You are controlling your entire military. And then with your general, you can cast a magic ability every once in a while. That's what you're limited to. The rest of the battle, you're watching it take place.
Yeah, they're auto battles. And it's like a paradigm shift system where like it's on a set thing. And it's rock, paper, scissors because you can't control it. So it's like you tell them to do something, they go do it, and they might fail, or they might do a good job, or the enemy might outplay you in that moment, and your armies start to deplete, and they will deplete down to zero if you're playing bad or if you don't know what you're doing. And that definitely happened to me a couple times, actually. I had to restart my playthrough because I was getting whooped. But your goal is to take out the opposing general. But the problem with that is if they're losing, the AI will just run and they'll retreat from you, and you can't beat them in that battle itself, and you have to like fight them again. So there's just so much going on, and there's menu after menu. So if you don't have a guide, you're lost for sure.
However, once you do start picking up those mechanics and you understand, hey, some troops work better against other kinds of troops, some formations do better against other kinds of formations, some heroes are going to be better at these sort of post-battle duels that you get into if your armies ever kind of wipe out all their soldiers, which actually happened to me a lot more than I expected. And once you understand the kind of vast litany of things that you need to understand, the complexity here isn't super high. The strategy is more, what's their army made of? How many troops do they have? Who's my hero? And what kind of, you know, troops can I bring that counter their type of troops well? And, you know, ranged versus melee, and really fairly basic strategy kinds of stuff. And again, a lot of it's not obvious at first, but if you're working from a resource and, you know, have the guide with the game or have looked those things up or played enough just to learn kind of who counters what, then once you've got an understanding here, it's a pretty straightforward game. It doesn't like we keep talking about like menus and complexity, like it's this overwhelming thing. And I think it starts a little overwhelming.
It is at first. Yeah. Yes.
But then once you learn to navigate it, it really isn't too much. I don't think.
Well, it isn't too much. It's just so different than the norm.
Yes. Absolutely. So, it's a very unique game, and it does take some getting used to.
And I don't hate that. I'm all for being unique. But I think one of the more straightforward concepts that I was able to grasp, and I think they did a good job in designing it this way, is the overworld map screen. Yeah. So we just talked about the battles that happen, but a lot of what you're doing is looking at this overworld map that looks more like a real-time strategy, kind of, and it's got a bunch of castles on it, and those castles have different colored flags, and the idea is you're trying to conquer all of them, I guess, and your kingdom has its own location on the map. The other kingdoms are, you know, dispersed everywhere else, and you have like lines connecting these castles, little trails, and there's like, it's always active. The timer is always going where enemies are either moving between castles or retreating, or you're doing different things. And your goal is to simply make all the colors, the flags, your color. But one important thing that you can do is pause that screen so that everyone stops and They're not, they're no longer moving real time.
Well, and that's key. And I'm glad that you found that out. Kenny, did you have a liberal use of the pause function?
No, I did find that there were times I had to make like choices, but I would either make things really quick or like jump into a castle to like manage some troops or quickly move some troops somewhere. But for the most part, I just let the time run and just adapted to what was going on.
Kenny was speed running.
I definitely used pause because there would be a character moving towards one of my castles, and I would pause because you could click on that character, see the generals that were coming, how many soldiers they had, what kind of soldiers they had. And then I could, if I did it in enough time, I could, with it paused, set up what I want my characters to do. So I would reinforce that castle. I'd send other units there. I would maybe even change the units that they are carrying so that they would be ready to fight once that enemy arrived. So yeah, I had a liberal use of the pause function, and I would get everything set up and then let the time run until something happens. And then I'd pause it again, set everything up and go again.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why that manual is so helpful, because we were talking about rock, paper, scissors. You've got on page 35 of your manual, if we could all turn there, you've got a soldier chart. And so you can see what units are strong or weak against other units. And there's a good amount of units here. You've got soldiers and cavalry and mages and samurai and archers and monks and harpies. And the list kind of goes on and on.
Right.
And so there's a lot of different dynamics here that are coming into the battle. Again, it's going to be trial and error in the game. And there's so many other factors that you might not fully be able to grasp what unit is stronger than another unit. But having this manual, I think, is super important, if not necessary, to understanding this game well enough to do well enough.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can learn these things by trial and error, but there's so many of them
3 years from now
that you're going to just have a really hard time with it. And you'll probably end up defaulting to just using one or two of those unit types that are pretty generically safe because you find that they're successful but that other times they don't get just totally like routed for no reason.
I'm actually really fascinated to learn about that manual being that big with this game, because there's no other game that I know of that they shipped the game with the manual like that. And it's clear to me that it was a companion to this game, and it's absolutely part of the experience. No other game that I know of requires you or assumes that you're going to look at the booklet as you play. And I kind of like that, actually. I don't know why I didn't realize that was part of the game.
You certainly don't have to. But again, the complexity is so high. And having actual descriptions here, like when you're in battle and you're doing these tactical formations, having a little text that actually walks you through kind of what that means and how your soldiers is going to act is a lot more straightforward than a one-word menu that kind of gives you some context and then figuring it out by using it a bunch of times. And so I think really all it does is save you loads and loads of time. But if you don't want to have to replay the game 8 times, which you might choose to anyways because there's so many storylines, then yeah, pick up the manual for sure.
Hmm.
One of the things that I respected most about this game is how the story is a part of all that's going on. And I don't know how randomized this is, or if you're kind of getting some of the same story components with different empires that you play, or if it's completely different experiences. I don't know. If it's completely different experiences, that replay value is ridiculous. But one of the first castles that I took over in my second playthrough was I defeated them and I killed a couple of their generals, but took a few as not civilians, as
captives.
Yeah. Thank you. As captives. And you can try to turn them on your side. Some of them wouldn't come, but one of them did come. But I found out he was sent to assassinate me, and I had to threaten him to try to get him to tell me who sent him. But he said that he would work for me. He'd work for me. So I let him work for me. The first battle that I went in with him, he fled at the beginning of the battle. So like backstabbing me. So even then, having those kind of story elements and it does similar things like that throughout the game are super interesting for someone who likes story and doesn't just want to be tactical all the time.
Dude, that's pretty cool. He was just lying to you so you wouldn't kill him, and then he just was like, all right, peace. Wow. That's awesome. I didn't realize that didn't happen to me, but I also didn't really take captives that much.
You just murdered everybody.
Nolan shows no mercy.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Tristan Empire. They don't take captives.
You're going to end up killing all of the Dragon Force users. I don't think you can, but...
I will rule the world.
Marduk.
Yeah.
Aged.
We've talked about it, but I think Dragon Force has one of the steeper learning curves of any games that we played so far on the podcast. I think it's fine doing what they did, but instead of just having it in a massive manual that is 40 pages long, have some kind of in-game tutorial. They could have explained something, but I didn't find any kind of option for explanation.
As an industry, I'm glad we have moved past this, and we most modern games do include in-game tutorials, even like modes of tutorial. Some of them you can't even skip because they want you to learn the game basics first. And it's so obvious that it's not here in this one that I'm like, I don't feel like learning this on my own. I want you to tell me. And so I agree. Like, that's going to keep a lot of people from getting to the core of the game because of how much is required just in a research. And that's boring to some people.
It is, but when we're playing this game today, like, those resources are readily available. If, you know, if you choose to, hey, let's go find a manual, look it up, go look up a guide. It's not like you're playing on a Saturn with a disc and, you know, your friend borrowed the manual and never brought it back, and so you're not friends anymore. I just don't feel like that's a huge hurdle. It's a bummer, but I don't think it should stop someone from trying to enjoy this game.
Agreed. I just think that it is a part of it.
Yeah,
it's certainly a reality in talking about this game. Absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe y'all are faster or smarter than me. It's funny watching Kenny's first play this week, not in an embarrassing way to him by any means. In fact, he was like, man, I didn't really know what I was doing. But I thought it was a great explanation for those that are trying to come to this game for the first time. Saying that, yeah, none of us know what we're doing coming into this game.
Right.
And so I watched your first play, didn't know what was going on. So I did a lot of reading before going in, still had to kind of like struggle my way through discovering what this game is actually all about. So it takes a lot of reading and gameplay, probably that time combined, an hour, if not two, until I started feeling comfortable with the kind of flow of the game.
That's probably about an accurate time frame.
So one thing I want to brag on the developers a bit is that they adapted real-time strategy, the genre, for the console. And I think they did a great job. So if you asked a real-time strategy fan like Kenny or somebody to play this game, they'd be like, this isn't real-time strategy because it's not StarCraft and it's not your normal real-time strategy games.
Age of Empires, right?
Yeah, Age of Empires. That's a better comparison. So what they did was they just made it an overworld map view, and it's just constantly moving. And you're not like micromanaging your units, like having to click a bunch like you would with a mouse. Like with a real-time strategy, you're clicking constantly. With this game, you don't have to do that. Like you're moving the world map a little bit to see what's going on, but for the most part, you're in menus and it just works. And it was like, it was a more pleasant experience than I was expecting going into a console RTS. Yeah.
They Sega-fied it. Like the Sega Saturn, Sega Genesis, they put those kinds of graphic and feel to it. I thought the graphics were pretty impressive. Each general had their own look. The battle scenes reminded me a lot of the chunky, colorful Sega Genesis graphic vibe that we've seen in some other games.
Yeah, lots and of the depth left, there.
A lot of depth there, a lot of color that popped there. And those left-to-right battles, they looked good. And they needed to, because it, in my opinion, it does get redundant after a while, because that really is a bulk of the game. And sometimes if they bring five or six generals to the fight and you bring five or six generals to the fight, it's going to take a long time for that battle to commence. And as far as I could find, there was no fast forward button or autocomplete or anything like that.
Huh?
It would have been super nice.
It would have been great. But yeah, this game's definitely a slog. We're talking...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I heard different numbers as I was kind of researching this week and got nowhere close to doing a complete playthrough of the game by any means. But 15 to 20 hours to do one storyline all the way through. And then theoretically, you can do, you know, 8 different storylines if you want. So a ton of content, and partly because of complexity, but partly because those battles just take time. You have to manage every single one. But you're right. They did a great job of throwing huge armies on the screen and actually letting them run at each other. And
it looked chaotic,
individual
though.
Sprites and then big, bright magic animations that actually like had a big impact on the battle if you used them well, and a unique variety of those too.
Well, and even with that, I didn't have any lag, any slowdown, even with something like 200 units running into a chaotic battle against
chaos. They did it.
I was like laughing at it. Like when the battle starts and everyone just starts running in different directions, I was like, whoa, what? But it was fun. Like, I agree, Kenny, the animations were on point. There weren't a ton, but some of the spells like looked really good. Let me shift though to the music. I loved the soundtrack to this game. It fit the tone so well. A lot of memorable tracks in there that I like looked up on YouTube this week and just kind of vibed to. It was a very chill soundtrack, and you would expect it to be kind of upbeat. It's a war story. It's a war game, but like the overworld map music was nice and like calming, but also at times it would pick up when it needed to. I don't know. What'd y'all think of the music?
I enjoyed it. I think I was so caught up in gameplay kind of stuff and looking at the unique elements there and trying to figure things out and getting enjoyment out of, you know, story and this weird melding of RPG with tactics and with strategy that I don't think I'd noticed the music much. But that's usually a good sign. That usually just means, hey, it's sitting there, you know, giving tone, defining what's going on, not being distracting. And so, I think it was well done.
And I thought it was good. I thought it complemented what was going on. I thought they had plenty of different tracks for the anime cutscenes, for the battles, for the overworld, all of those things. But I wouldn't have gone as far to say that they're standout tracks. I thought that they were all good for what they did, but none of them did I care to listen to outside of playing the game.
Fair enough. I just... That stood out to me, and it's been a while on the podcast where I've said that, just because like we played a bunch of weird titles lately, but this one, like, yeah, I actually looked it up and I was like vibing to it.
Two other things. One, if you are able to play all 8 empires, which you are eventually, you can play the 6, and then I think you have to beat the game and you unlock the other 2. But if you play the 8 and they're all different stories, which they are, but have different components to the actual ongoing story throughout the game, then the replayability is going to be absolutely insane. True. And a lot of fun there. But then two, to play this game today, it's not going to be easy. Mm-hmm. Not only because it's got a steep learning curve and all that, but to get your hands on a physical copy, we've already talked about how difficult that is. And then even to emulate Sega Saturn, because it wasn't the biggest thing ever, it hasn't had the biggest backing of emulation or anything like that. So to be able to find an emulator, make it work, find the ROM, make it work, all of those things, it's going to take a little bit of experimenting. You will be able to do it, but it's not one of the easier games to play.
There's like a running joke in, I guess, the modding community or whoever ends up making these emulators, that they all suck. And like the quote unquote best one out there, the description of it is like a less bad emulator for Sega Saturn. Like they just haven't figured it out for whatever reason.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Who would like to go first?
I'll share my thoughts.
Ooh.
Ah, you boys.
Go first, Kenny.
All right. Definitely takes a little bit of on-ramping. Definitely takes a willingness to embrace some of the complexity, which we talked about, but not even fully, because, you know, like the geography of the map has an effect on your armies and the level of your castles and the items of your guys. But if the idea of a long game that's got enough story that you can immerse yourself in it, but that's really driven by tactics, RPG, real-time strategy elements that feels unique and in a fun sort of tail end of the 2D being kind of the big thing era of gaming appeals to you, then you're going to absolutely love this title. It might take a little while to get there, but once you do, I think this is a real gem. And so I had a fun time playing it this week overall, despite the learning curve, and I think it was a really unique, really well-made game that's not perfect and definitely hard to explain and whatever else. But overall, I think it's a winner, so I'm going to say New Game Plus for me.
That is one vote in the affirmative. I will step in and say that, unfortunately, I think Dragon Force is for such a specific audience. Once I passed the hour or two or whatever it was threshold and really understood the game, I wasn't too keen on putting in the hours and hours of redundant battles just to get through the story and unite the kingdoms. Like, I ended up appreciating what they did with this game, and I do think that for that specific audience, they're going to find a lot of fun and a lot of value here. I completely understand why it did well when it came out, that it had such good reception. I think today, with the difficulties, the learning curve, and the limited attention span of modern gamers, that this game is one that, for now, I'd say, put to the side, I do not give it my vote for New Game Plus status.
I will jump in and say that I at least agree on the fact that it was probably a better game in 1996 than it is today. I still think worth going back and playing, but I think 1996, this was a standout that did revolutionary kinds of things. Those things aren't as novel anymore, and it really does have to like speak to you directly for it to be good. But it spoke to me.
Nolan, you've got the deciding votes. Did you come into this episode knowing which way you were going?
I did not, actually. Oh.
Have you made your decision now?
I don't know if that's ever happened to me. I always know. So I am torn because there's an aspect of this game that really appeals to me as a Fire Emblem fan, and that's the different generals that you get and managing your characters. Like, they each have their own unique artwork, names, but that's where I take issue. I wish they would have gone a little more in depth with each character and maybe some story elements. I know that's asking a lot. There's already so much in this game, but I did not feel connected to my generals the way that I do in Fire Emblem. And like, I wanted to like them more, and I was wanting more RPG elements in terms of leveling them and increasing their stats and armor and items and everything. And there's a little bit of that, but it's more just army management. There's enough real time in this game that it turns me off to enjoying it. And because the learning curve is so steep, I don't see how I could give it New Game Plus, even though it's for sure quality. Like, a lot of the things impressed me. I love the graphics, love the music, but I think I'm with Dustin. It's for a specific person, and I'm not that person, and I don't think a lot of people are that person. So no New Game Plus. Sorry.
All right, I'm changing mine back.
No!
No, I can't. That means that Dragon Force is not New Game Plus certified.
Are we in trouble?
Probably not. Most people haven't played this game.
Okay.
A few of you wrote in and let us know your thoughts on the retro game of the week. Bro Jim said, allow me to offer the perspective of someone who isn't a fan of the genre and has little experience with it.
Okay, amazing.
The entry level to this game is high. Even reading the manual and putting in a few hours, I am still utterly confused by most of the systems in the game. The game itself doesn't look that great until you get to the battles, where the character sprites are charming in a Metal Slug kind of way. That is exactly what they look like, by
100%.
The way.
100%.
It is. Wow, nice. Well, which said. I enjoy alongside the cringe anime story that's bad enough to be good. Unfortunately, I immediately hit a section where I was getting hammered relentlessly by enemies who resurrected and or were far more powerful, and I had no idea who they were or what to do. This kept me from fully experimenting with the systems and units. In the end, it's a high bar of entry, and I probably won't pick it back up.
See, I think that's a good representation of a lot of gamers out there for this game.
And I don't think we're going to argue with it at all. We all faced that like high bar and grappled with it this week, and it's certainly a reality here.
Cecil wrote in and said, this game may not be a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but strategy RPGs and that old late 80s, early 90s fantasy anime aesthetic is right up there in my reasons to live. The warrior inside me is all about those battles with tiny stylized units, storming the burning fields, and crashing into one another. But it almost feels secondary to the map phase where you prepare for war. I keep pausing and emphasizing certain words because Cecil has incorporated many titles of songs to the metal band Dragon Force in his
commentaries.
Okay, make them obvious. We're oblivious to it, so we're like, oh, that's a little stilted.
Such a small audience to know, like smaller than even know of the game. Like, they still remember the band Dragon Force and know all their songs. But managing your units, more importantly, your generals. The game's strategy is all about recognizing your generals' achievements and rallying conquered enemies into your ranks. You can't just cry thunder and rush into battle after battle blindly, which can be sometimes rough because this is a very dense and very slow game at points. The last journey home to your main base to restock troops can sometimes be a chore. Still, my spirit will go on for strategy games. Acquired taste it may be, but for JRPG fans, this might be the game to bridge the gap.
That's interesting. Because there's a little... See, I wouldn't say that, though. Anime fans, maybe, not JRPG fans.
Man, I don't know if I would even consider this an RPG game pretty much in the slightest.
Not traditionally,
there's RPG elements. You're leveling up your generals. You're giving them items.
Yeah.
There's the story art is about that's happening.
The art style. Man.
It's definitely not like a heavy RPG, but it's certainly got those elements.
Thank you, Cecil, for writing in with your ridiculous commentary, adding all of those titles. And then Garlisle wrote in.
Of course.
Had I not had previous experience with similar games before, Dragon Force almost certainly would have been an intimidating wall. Even the manual is a great many pages explaining the what, but absolutely not the how of playing the game. It's very possible to crash and burn immediately and have no idea why, especially when the game doesn't display crucial information like unit matchups. Once you do get your grounding, though, Dragon Force is pretty solid. Each layer of gameplay has interesting aspects about becoming without becoming too complex, and the ambitious scale of the game is respectable. Unfortunately, I had trouble engaging with it as much as I wanted to for a simple reason. It's just too slow. Yep. A single skirmish often feels too long to resolve, and the map pace is a crawl. It's all too much time spent waiting. But that's me. For the right type of player, this game could really earn some medals. Nice.
Okay, yeah, that was good. But I'm very happy that most of, or I guess all of them were like, yeah, it's just too much. I thought they were going to love it and they were going to hate our decision.
I think part of it, you know, is having a week to play the game and then having to report on it. You know, like that's obviously totally different than coming across this game naturally, especially many years ago. And finding out about this game organically, like that's a totally different experience than like, man, I've got a few hours to invest in this game and then I've got to report back on it. And that's that is our podcast. So that's like what this is. So I'm not downing that at all. It's just a part of the review and what we do.
Yeah, it's a reality of how we have to go about things. And I think it's good to acknowledge it. But yeah, definitely in 1996, spend the entire summer casually playing this game, you know, around all the other games that you've got going on and get a nice thorough playthrough. Yeah, immerse yourself in it. Try and get a really realistic sense of whether it's enjoyable in a week while learning the game is just, it's a lot to ask.
But thank you guys for writing in and sending in your thoughts on the retro game of the week. You can do that each and every week. Send your commentary to ngppodcast@gmail.com. Find us in our Discord. You can just send us your thoughts. We'd love to include it as a part of our show next week. But for now, we're going to put aside Dragon Force, and we're going to the randomizer, but we are not randomly selecting this week because it is another Patreon pool.
Nice.
Which is super exciting.
Yeah.
We haven't done this in a bit.
It feels like it's been a while. We had the summer of Patreon pools where it was like
Yeah, and
four.
I believe that was our last one.
Oh.
But we did. We did like four in the summer or every other week. It was something crazy like that. But now we had taken a little bit of a break. We had to get through our anniversary. And now we're doing our first one of year five or whatever. I don't remember
year
how
five.
How that works.
I think it is year five. What options are in there this time?
All right. So a lot of the ones that we've seen before, we've got Final Fantasy IX, we've got a few Ocarina of Times, Bubble Bobble, Heroes of Might and Magic 3, Luigi's Mansion, Ooh. We've got Parasite Eve, and just a whole bunch of games in here. But from that cold list, we are going to randomly select which game we're going to be playing for the next 7 days.
I'm gonna call it.
Okay,
what do you think it is?
Like, are we doing this off air?
No, like, call it. What do you think it's going to be?
Okay, it's going to be Heroes of Might and Magic 3.
I'm calling it Ocarina of Time.
Randomizing now. We are going to be playing a true role-playing video game this time.
Okay.
It was developed and published by Square for the PlayStation.
I've heard that before. Okay.
It was released in 1998, and it is the first in its franchise.
Oh, wow. That's not where I thought that was going.
No, same. Okay.
It began as a sequel to Chrono Trigger and then gradually became its own game with a science fiction premise.
What? Huh.
Interesting.
It was a game submitted by our patrons Luciano and Astral Soul.
I know what it is.
And the game is Xenogears.
Oh, never mind. I thought it was Parasite Eve. what?
Xenogears.
Okay.
Sweet.
It's a game that I have seen. I had always, like, PlayStation was my console, PlayStation 2. I had always seen this game, never played it.
Huh.
It looks like the front character on the artwork looks like a guy from the Azumo Nation that I just played in this game.
Oh, great.
But, guys, it was created by Tetsuya Takahashi and his wife as a proposal for Final Fantasy VII and as a sequel to Chrono Trigger and then became its own game. Like, there's a lot of promise here.
Them some big shoes.
Them some shoes.
Dang. Okay.
Find a copy of Xenogears this week, put it into your PlayStation, and let's play.
Let's play. Let's chat in Discord. NGPpodcast.com. If you click join us in Discord, you can take part in our amazing community that's seriously growing all the time and is thriving, and it's hard to keep up with all the channels. So come be a part.
You can choose to not just be a part of our Discord, but to support our show as well if you would like. Just like Matt and Terizo Backrub did this week. Thank you.
I never want to hear you say that again.
That's Thank a you good for name. Becoming patrons.
Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. And of course, a big thanks to our producer level supporters, Antonin, Ben, Dear Baby, Corey, Maxima, Zach, and Zion, and Garlisle, our director level supporter. You guys go above and beyond to help this show reach some of our ambitious goals in improving our quality and in sharing what we do with the world. So thanks so much.
Kenny, your cadence sometimes is like, da-da-da-da, and da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I'm getting old, and I have to think about every, like, partial sentence. I used to think in paragraphs, and at some point, I'm going to be down to one word at a time.
Oh, man. Well, we are mere dollars away from hitting our goal of doing a one-shot D&D campaign with the three of us. Really just a few more patrons coming in or a few more that are upping their patronage, and we are there. So if you have been listening for any length of time and you are now wanting to hop in and support us at any level, we would greatly appreciate it. Again, that's patreon.com/NGP podcast. You can find us on any of our other social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP podcast, YouTube at New Game Plus podcast. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play the Patreon pool selected Xenogears. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
Nolan.
And this has been New Game Plus.